Welcome to Fed Central, brought to you by Deloitte, a program where executives and federal government leaders talk about the issues and initiatives that are making a real impact on the business of government today to help government help America. On June 28th, as most of you know, the Supreme Court handed down its rulings on the four legal challenges to the Affordable Care Act, finding in favor of defendants on the central issue of the individual mandate and upholding the balance of the law, with the exception of federal power to terminate states' Medicaid funding. Today, we're going to discuss the implications of the Supreme Court and the federal government. We'll talk about the Supreme Court ruling on the Affordable Care Act, potential implications for government agencies with health oversight, and immediate steps that governments may take in the aftermath of the rulings. Joining us today to discuss the Supreme Court ruling, Kelvin Womack. Kelvin is a principal with Deloitte Consulting, and he leads the federal health sector and serves as its practice leader. Mr. Womack also serves as a federal health reform executive leader, helping federal health clients address their needs related to health reform legislation. And Diane Murray, who's a principal with Deloitte Consulting, she leads the IRS account, and she's helping the IRS with business and technology changes required to support the health reform legislation. Welcome to you both. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello. Thank you.
Well, there's a lot going on. So, Kelvin, why don't you give us an overview of the Supreme Court ruling and what it means for federal agencies?
Okay, thanks, Jane. Well, first of all, as I think many of us know, the court found in favor of the defendants on the central issue of the individual mandate and upholding the balance of the law with the exception of the federal power to terminate states' Medicaid funding. So that was one thing that came out of it. Second thing was the majority of the court decided that the Anti-Injunction Act did not apply. The court did not vote on the question of whether the mandate was severable from the rest of the law because the mandate was upheld. And thirdly, the challenge to the federal government's power to require a minimum Medicaid eligibility for the states at 133% of the federal poverty level was limited, but it was not invalidated. The court ruled that the states have a choice to participate in the expansion of Medicaid, since the federal government does not have the power to revoke existing Medicaid funds if a state chooses not to participate.
All right. So from a federal government agency perspective, what are the next steps that the government will have to engage in order to implement now the Affordable Care Act? Or are they already well down the road?
Yeah. So I think, Jane and Diane, they are already well down the road. What this decision did was it removed a lot of uncertainty from the feds as to how they were going to move forward if, in fact, any portions of the law had not been upheld by the court. They've got a full plate. In the next 18 months, there's a lot of things that they need to get done. And when I say they, there are several federal agencies. It's not just the Department of Health and Human Services. Diane serves with the Internal Revenue Service, and we'll talk about some of the things they have to do. But our federal clients have a lot of work to do together and collaboratively over the next 18 months to get health insurance exchanges implemented and out, and a lot of other things dealing with some of the public health and prevention activities that this law provides as well.
So talk a little bit, if you would, Diane, about the number of agencies that are going to be engaged.
Oh, gosh, at probably, you know, at least six or seven, if not more. We've got HHS, we've got the IRS, we've got the Department of Homeland Security. Kelvin, can you think of others?
Well, when you talk about HHS, I mean, there's several operating components of HHS. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has a major role, the Food and Drug Administration, the National Institutes of Health, and at ground zero, of course, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
So with all of those agencies engaging, there's obviously going to be a lot of collaboration between agencies. Is that a technology issue, or exactly how does that take place?
Well, what I'd like to do is ask Diane to talk a little about, for example, use the IRS's role as an example of the collaboration that needs to occur. There's a major technology implementation effort underway across the federal government as well as our state clients, and also many of our commercial clients and the health plans and provider markets as well. But, you know, Dan, you want to speak to, for example, what kinds of things the IRS has on its plate?
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, the IRS is collaborating tremendously with HHS, particularly CMS, on the implementation of the health insurance exchanges. The IRS is actually has a central role in making sure that the premium tax credit that individuals and families are eligible for to purchase affordable health insurance is implemented properly. They'll also levy the tax on individuals who don't pay the who choose not to purchase health insurance. And it is a technology challenge. So there's a huge technology push to get the exchanges in place, the interfaces between the states and HHS, and between HHS and the IRS. But it's a lot more than that. It's more than just technology. There needs to be governance. There's data being exchanged. There's tremendous security and privacy impacts. And each organization has its own standards for the protection of data, for the exchange of data, and they need to come together to do that seamlessly so that the public, when purchasing insurance and interacting with the government around health insurance exchanges, gets a consistent message and really one voice from the government.
So based on that, I mean, that it does sound like there is a lot of work to engage in, not just, you know, that which is being done now, but also now that the Supreme Court has come down with its ruling, there are going to be more states that come on board, more expansion in the workload that's done. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. And you mentioned, Jane, that there's a lot of work that's already been underway since this law was enacted a couple of years ago. HHS has already stood up two portals for consumers to do research on what health plans options are available for small groups and individuals. They've also stood up a portal that allows people with pre-existing conditions to go in and shop and find out what insurance options are available to them. The CDC was awarded a lot of money for a public health and prevention fund to do public outreach to U.S. citizens about the kinds of things that we as citizens should be doing to improve our health, with the theme that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of care. There's a lot of work to be done across all agencies and reaching out to the public so that we as citizens understand what's going to be available to us in this law and what we should be doing as citizens, quite frankly, to improve our own health.
And people may not understand that the role of government to, you know, to make sure that this is implemented and that people all know what their options are, they really do need to explain, you know, how this impacts. So, but that's part of their workload, and that's
yes.
part of what they're undertaking now. Is that right?
Yes, and I think that one of the things the government needs to really think about is right now it's a matter of outreach. It's a matter of educating the public on what's coming down the pike. But when you flip the switch, especially when the exchanges go into effect, there are going to be a lot of questions. The public is going to need to know, where do I go to get insurance? How do I do it? What if it doesn't happen right? You know, what's going to happen to me if I choose not to purchase it? And I think the government's going to experience a tremendous amount of telephone calls, internet inquiries, and to really make sure that the government has the infrastructure in place to handle the customer service to the public when they are starting to purchase health insurance and get that on board with the exchanges.
And does that happen at the federal level and the state level, or how does that exactly work?
It's going to happen at both levels, Jane, and it's going to have to happen, as we've said earlier, in collaboration with each other. So, for example, one of the things that the Supreme Court ruling came out and said, I think we mentioned earlier, is that the federal government does not have the right to mandate the 133% of the federal poverty level for this new law. So that means states have the option of participating in and receiving that extra federal funding for that. Now, there is an area where both the states and the federal government have to work together, again, to make sure that the citizens understand what their options are. But quite frankly, there's going to have to be collaboration between, for example, IRS, HHS, and state and local organizations to ensure that, since states have options as to what degree they participate in this, that all the systems and technology and, again, public education is enacted and put in place to make sure this works well.
Does that then require an expansion of not just federal architecture, if you will, but also the federal architecture as it relates to how states interact with the federal government?
It certainly requires a modification, too. The architecture is in place right now, and I think Diane, you know, has examples, you know, from IRS, but absolutely it's going to require more and more coordination and integration of existing infrastructure.
Right. And so HHS is really front and center with CMS in the delivery of the exchanges and the coordination between the federal government and the states on this exchange of information. And they play a critical role in making sure that that data exchange happens seamlessly.
And you talked about deadlines earlier. So what are some of the deadlines that are coming up, and what do they mean for federal government agencies that are working on this?
Well, I'll give a couple that come to mind right away. This November, I believe sometime around November 16th, the states have to give the federal government information on whether they are going to implement a state exchange or not. Because remember, it's not mandatory. And in fact, for those states that do not implement an exchange at the state level, the federal government is going to be implementing a federal exchange to cover the difference. So that collaboration between federal and states, again, happens this November. And then in January, the states have to have a plan that they have provided to the federal government as to how they are going to implement those exchanges in states where they choose to implement an exchange.
So that's coming up literally in just a few months.
Yes.
Right. And so once that decision is made by the states, are they able at some point in the future to reverse that decision? Does the law allow for that? Because you can see a situation where they may you may change leadership and the decisions might change. So do we know how that's going to be implemented?
Well, I'm not sure how it's going to be implemented, Jane, but since the states do have options, again, to the extent that they want to participate in these exchanges, you know, I would guess that down the road, if new leadership comes in place in a particular state, you know, that those options could be exercised.
Okay. So we have a lot of work to do. And you mentioned earlier that there's also some preventative care that's going to take place as a result of this. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're talking this morning to Kelvin Womack, Principal, Deloitte Consulting, and Federal Health Sector Leader and the Practice Leader for Federal Health Sector. And also with us is Diane Murray. She's a Principal with Deloitte Consulting as well, and she leads the IRS account and is helping the IRS with their business and technology changes in support of the ACA. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Federal agencies call on Deloitte for insights, people, and the experience it brings to their most meaningful and challenging problems. Drawing from its broad portfolio of capabilities, global resources, and leading practices across government, Deloitte's federal experience helps clients achieve more today while building a stronger foundation for tomorrow. Learn more at www.deloitte.com/federal. Deloitte, helping government help America.
Welcome back to Fed Central, brought to you by Deloitte. Today, we're talking about the Supreme Court ruling on the Affordable Care Act and how it will impact the federal government. And joining us is Kelvin Womack, principal with Deloitte Consulting, and he leads the Deloitte Health Sector. Also with us on the show, Diane Murray, a principal with Deloitte Consulting, who leads the IRS account for Deloitte. So we've been talking about the ACA and the impact that it's having with the federal government, with HHS and other industries, other collaborations within the federal government. But talk about industry collaboration for a moment, if you will. Talk about how the industry can play a role in how HHS and other agencies actually implements the Affordable Care Act.
Okay, well, first of all, industry, I think, has a major role in making all this happen. So this is all about increasing access for our citizens, increasing the quality of health care, and as much as we can, taking out cost. And all of that happens in the delivery system. So as we talk about making this happen, there's several things that are already occurring. So first of all, CMS, which I think I mentioned earlier, is at the center of this, has got funding to put in place a Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. And that program is all about getting grants and fundings out into industry to come up with best practices, best innovations, and doing the three things that I just mentioned into our delivery system. So that involves our health plans industry, that involves our provider and hospital industry, and it also involves our pharmaceutical industry working together to provide these best practices and new innovations.
So that's an important feature. And the tax provision that the Supreme Court law, the Supreme Court decision came down with, basically it's changed or shifted the way it was being perceived or actually how maybe the law was intended. So how does that impact the IRS, Diane?
Well, actually, not quite as much as one would think. So basically, the Supreme Court kept the ACA intact, and the IRS had been working on the provisions of the legislation since it was enacted. I think what the calling the the justification or the, you know, supporting the individual mandate by supporting the government's right to tax and levy taxes just puts a little more scrutiny on the IRS, puts them a little more front and center in implementation. They have, you know, healthcare isn't their business. Tax administration is their business. But this does put them right smack dab in the forefront of the healthcare legislation. I think it's also important to point out, though, that the IRS, there's a lot of tax implications to ACA that some are already in effect and are being put into effect, you know, over the course of the next 5 years. I'll give you a few examples. So, for example, tax credits for small businesses to help them afford to purchase insurance coverage for their employees. There are also fees levied on the insurers and pharmaceutical companies and providers that that help support what we consider the shared responsibility portion of the legislation, helping to fund the legislation. You know, for example, and this is already in effect, there's a fee on the import or manufacturing of certain branded prescription drugs that the IRS has already implemented to start bringing in money from the pharmaceutical companies that are importing or manufacturing certain drugs to, as I said, help pay for the legislation.
So all of that, all of those changes that you just talked about require changes in tax law, or how does that impact the IRS? How do they incorporate those mandates?
So actually, those are actually relatively simple, because if you think the IRS gets tax code changes every year, so it's they're used to getting from Congress based on, you know, current, you know, whatever laws are in place, changes to tax legislation. So the implementing of those is really a standard process that the IRS goes through every year to make sure that the tax system reflect the current tax laws and the current tax code, and that they're used to getting this legislation, they're used to doing it quickly, and they don't often have too much trouble with it.
So Kelvin talked earlier about the fact that there is going to be a lot of questions. There are going to be a lot of questions that come up around the law. So I imagine that the questions not only will have to do with the healthcare exchanges or questions about implementation, but it will also have to do with the tax laws, right?
Yeah, so and the IRS is ready and prepared to field questions about taxes, and I believe questions about health care itself, even if it has something to do to the IRS, will be routed through to HHS as the one voice for, you know, health care for the government.
That requires training, probably new staffing, you know, helplines, you know, things that are going to be put in place that maybe don't exist today or need to be changed in order to accommodate that. Is that right, Kelly?
Yes, and in fact, we know that HHS and IRS are going to be increasing their workforce.
Yes.
To deal with a lot of what we're talking about here today. So absolutely. And again, going back to the collaboration that happens between our feds, our state and local governments, and the industry, the same thing is occurring in state and local. I mean, there's a lot to be done. Our state and local governments, I mean, we all know that they also have budget woes and deficits and financial problems as well. They've also got a lot to do when it comes to increasing their workforce, training their workforce to deal with the kinds of things that we're talking about here.
So this law is probably the most misunderstood law that currently exists. There are probably so many things in it that we haven't really thought about, at least from a government perspective. So give us some of the other highlights that you think are little known and will be, you know, of major importance.
Yeah. So we talked earlier about, I think I mentioned, I use the term, a pound of prevention is worth, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of care. So there's major provisions in the law that deal with public health and wellness programs. We mentioned the CDC funds for prevention and public health. So there's a lot in this law about preventative type measures. And the idea being, the more we can keep all of us out of our healthcare system for as long as we can, we take cost out of the system. So there's a lot to be said about that. We talked also about outcomes, you know, not paying just for the transaction or for the visit, but also paying for quality of care and getting health outcomes. The law stood up a new organization called the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute that works in collaboration with NIH and industry to do research on what are some of the best practices in comparing effective health care across the country, and to provide that research not only to our provider and our industry and our healthcare industry, but also to the citizenry. so that we have a better understanding of what are some of the better treatments, if you will, for different types of chronic diseases.
So does that mean that doctors will need to provide information about the outcome of their treatment for any given patient, or do we know exactly how that might be implemented long term?
Yeah, the law requires that our delivery network and doctors actually provide reporting on the quality of care and how they are actually implementing and improving quality of care for the citizenry. So that is one of the requirements of the law.
That's a major shift. And that, I think, is part of the whole wellness idea that I think has been proliferating in just the society. You know, the people are taking vitamins, exercising, trying to eat more healthy foods. But this is something that's going to go a little further than that, right? They're really going to try to prevent disease by leading a healthy life and try to encourage citizens.
Exactly, Jane. It's a lot about awareness and putting this information in front of us as citizens so we can do a better job of taking care of ourselves.
All right. So talk about some of the other the timelines that people might want to think about if they're working at an agency. Maybe many of the agencies that are working on this, I was even unaware of, the Federal Trade Commission, the Department of Justice, the FDA, you mentioned, Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services are just some of the few that come to mind. So what are the other timelines that may be in play here?
So I think the biggest timeline that looming is the 2014 when the health insurance exchanges go into effect. So that's when you have widespread availability of health insurance to the uninsured and they'll be able to purchase it. So that's a major change for the government, major change for the public, and major change for insurance companies.
Kelvin?
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a major thing that's going to come up. And I want to emphasize that a lot of things have already occurred and are already in place, such as the information portals that I mentioned on pre-existing conditions and being able to shop for insurance, and also just for small groups and individuals to go up into healthcare.gov and get information on being able to shop for insurance.
So the collaboration that you talk about, is it a collaboration that will take place online? Is it a collaboration that will take place from HHS to the various industry partners? Or how will that, you know, because there are practitioners, healthcare practitioners, there are health insurance agencies that are engaged in this, there's citizen engagement, there's a lot of different actors, if you will, involved in the process. So how does all that collaboration take place?
Yeah, it's a very good question, Jane. It's occurring naturally. It's occurring in face-to-face meetings. It's occurring in conferences. It's occurring in educational seminars. It's occurring in industry-led discussions, as well as government-led discussions about what it's going to take to implement this law effectively. So it's all of the above.
Mm-hmm. And as they start this collaboration process, you know, what's industry's role? What do companies like Deloitte do to try to facilitate or implement? What is the next step for you?
Well, as we've said, there's a lot of work to be done for the nation in getting this law implemented effectively. Our role as Deloitte is to partner, work with our clients, and we work with clients across all of these industries, obviously state and local government, federal government, health plans, the pharmaceutical marketplace, you know, the hospital marketplace. We're working across this entire industry with all of our clients to help them put in place all of the things they need to do over the next, you know, several years.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plenty of work to do for them, and there's certainly plenty of work to do for organizations like ours to help them.
Absolutely.
And so talk about that. Talk about the IRS's next steps. Where do they go from here?
Well, they keep on keeping on, actually. They're full speed ahead with implementation. They haven't looked back, and this doesn't change their course. And they're, like I said, the next big thing for the IRS is going to be the 2014 implementation of the exchanges.
Do you think there will be new hiring as a result of ACA? Do you think there will be, you know, more jobs in the marketplace because of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, we know there are going to be some new federal jobs. Many agencies are hiring or plan to hire to support the ongoing administration of the legislation.
Yeah, and also, as we mentioned earlier, that Prevention and Public Health Fund that the law authorized, part of the dollars that are going to go into that are to put more providers and physicians out into the marketplace. I mean, by the year 2020, I forget the numbers, but we're going to need a lot more providers in the American marketplace to take care of all of us, particularly those of us in my generation, the baby boomers that are, you know, about to hopefully not enter the healthcare system. But the law funds that. The law provides for putting more providers in the marketplace to take care of the citizenry.
Well, so much more to talk about. Fascinating conversation with both of you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Thank you.
All right, I'm sure we'll be hearing much more about that in the days to come. You've been listening to Fed Central, brought to you by Deloitte. Our guest, Kelvin Womack, principal with Deloitte Consulting, and he is the leader of the Deloitte health sector. And also with us, Diane Murray, principal with Deloitte Consulting, who leads the IRS account. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and thanks for listening to Fed Central. To find out more at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Jane Norris. This is Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This has been Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM with Jane Norris, your host. Make sure to tune in again in 2 weeks for another edition of Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and on federalnewsradio.com/FedCentral.